Hello and welcome to NJ Biz Conversations. I'm your host, Jeff Kanige. My guest today is Chris Sugden. He is the managing partner of Edison Partners in Princeton. It's a growth equity firm. Chris, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. Good to see you again.
Good to see you too. It's been a while since we chatted, and I was as we're heading into 2023, I wanted to get your views of what's happening in the economy and some of the businesses that you work with. I would like to hear a little bit about the year just passed, though. I mean, there was a lot that happened in the economically, rising interest rates, inflation, some uncertainty. I'm curious about what your assessment is of the capital markets now at the end of 2022. Our viewers should know that we're talking in late December of 2022 with 2023 coming up. What are you seeing? What is your feeling now? What are you hearing from the companies that you work with about the year just passed?
Well, as you said, tumultuous is certainly one word, or volatile is another. And my, how things change in just a short, 6 to 12 months. I think at the start of 22, there was actually a fair amount of optimism, but concern. Mm-hmm. To be very frank, having seen some of these cycles before, it did feel like at the end of 21, the top was nearing. And, we were in cab driver and Uber driver land of NFTs and crypto. And so here we are, hindsight's 2020, of course, but you could have sort of predicted this. You sort of just listened to the news beat around you, but also valuation of the private markets had gotten pretty crazy. I think the public markets have reflected that to some degree, or to a big degree, depending on your viewpoint going forward. The private markets are still playing catch up. Okay. I would say it's interesting because, sort of like the unemployment, are we in a recession? Are we not in a recession? What do we call it? When employment's going well, or unemployment's going well, if you will, and yet you're seeing some things slow down. I think that's actually the way I would characterize a lot of the portfolio companies and tech in general. You've not seen companies really, for lack of a better way to put it, missing plan. You're not seeing companies go sideways or backwards in our portfolio. You're actually seeing some good solid growth through, the first 9 months of the year. Obviously, okay. The fourth is almost in the books, and we get preliminary and flash and that kind of thing. But I'd characterize the overall health of the operating businesses as fairly strong, but at the same time, knowing that the growth at all cost mentality is over, full stop. Okay. We've always been a firm that focuses on what we call product market fit and good solid unit economics in the businesses. So, and that sounds like tooting our own horn or selling my own book, but I think the good news is we've always had a focus on, can you both grow and be profitable? And that's kind of paid dividends and seeing the health of the portfolio. Now, a grow at all costs kind of mindset is you start to see some of the, both big tech and high flying tech more in the valley, frankly. Mm-hmm. You have to pull back, right, and get reasonable very quickly. I would say, from the standpoint of kind of looking forward, what I would say is I've seen this now, it's partly just the number of amount of gray hair, but doing this a long time, you're seeing the cycle stretch, but yet not declared as stretching. Enterprises start first by basically they're telling procurement or their heads of business units, don't make the decision, but don't stop making the decision. So they'll stretch their buying cycles. And where that manifests in our B2B companies in the pipeline, you see deals sit longer. Okay. They're not dead, but you're going to have a 2-quarter buying cycle or 3-quarter buying cycle when you thought you were going to get it done in a, in Q4 becomes a Q1 or a Q2. You're seeing a little bit of those worry signs, in my opinion. And as we also know, recessions sometimes are a self-fulfilling prophecy. The more we talk about them, the faster they come. Right. I think there's a little bit of that going on in the psychology as well.
Okay. Well, it's interesting that you say that, because in my conversations with other business leaders, they're hard pressed to make a prediction, obviously for good reason. But they don't really sound like they're expecting a recession. I mean, they're acting, and when I ask them about what their plans are, they're basically full speed ahead. No one is really saying, yeah, I'm expecting a big pullback and we're going to have to really be careful here. Is that where you are?
I think that's generally a fair statement. I'd say when we got our portfolio companies, one thing I'd say, and from a capital markets perspective, we said it this year in the back half of 22, and I'd say it at least for the first half of 23, do not be in a position where you have to raise money. And okay. I'd say that the venture businesses that are out there listening to this as well, that the venture and earlier stage market will be very, very difficult. It's already gotten tough. It'll get tougher. I think the established businesses, as you said, where you weren't spending kind of over your skis anyway. That's why it's sort of a business, I hate to say as usual, you'll see some more. I think you will see some more layoffs. I think you're going to see the market. I will make a prediction. I'm sure I'll be wrong and you'll play it in 3 or 4 months. But I think the first quarter, you're going to see additional capital markets pull back. And those are based on, I talk to people smarter than me and kind of bigger economic kind of thinkers. I think we've got a little bit of ways to go. The housing market is starting to kind of finally, for lack of a better way, to bottom. Right. But I do think in a capital markets perspective, we're going to see the public markets pull back a little bit more than they have already before we see any kind of bottom. I predict actually the R word. I don't want to be doom and gloom. I don't think it's going to be as long. I think it could be steep, but not steep in the way that we've seen prior ones, you know? But I do think we're going to see it come back pretty quickly as well. And again, some of this is technical and right. All of it is your business specific as opposed to making this global point of view, right? The good news is the consumer is generally healthy. Balance sheets aren't as screwed up as they were in terms of personal balance sheets, in terms of the way home equity got over the skis back in the last crash. So I do think there are elements here that give reason to be more positive of either a quote unquote soft landing or at least a recovery that's faster.
Well, that's what I wondered because of the pandemic, there was sort of a kind of a mandatory pullback for at least a year, both consumers and businesses. So that everybody seems to think the pandemic, everybody meaning businesses, consumers, seems to think the pandemic has ended now, and there is a sense of normalcy. And I think what I was picking up was sort of a real desire to get back to that. And I wonder if that's going to be enough, or as you say, a self-fulfilling prophecy. Would that kind of optimism, that almost forced optimism, kind of carry us through for 20 years?
It could carry us through. And I do think there's a lot to psychology. I would say, you know, it's cliche for sure, but we forget when the Fed wants to take the economy, you know, backwards, it has all the power in the world to do it. And the balance sheet is so big. And you can see, even with last week, it was still hawkish talk with what looked like, you know, kind of more positive numbers that would have caused, you know, Powell to take a little bit more of a softer view. So I think that adage is going to stick here for at least 2 more quarters. That's why I'm, you know, hesitant to sort of declare we can get through this without it being, you know, a technical recession or something worse. Yeah. I think from that perspective of the Fed's going to keep fighting inflation until they win, which means at some point you can't, that there's too big a force to reckon with, for lack of a better word. But that's also why I say at the micro level, our portfolio companies that are 20, 50, 100 million in revenue and want to put up 20, 30, 50% growth, depending on the situation, they will be able to do that because there are opportunities out there to close business. The real point is, as you kind of get down in the weeds of software companies, the key is to have a big enough pipeline because you're going to see a hit or miss with closing. When everything was up and to the right for the last several years and, you know, the pipe's moving really fast, it'll start to slow down. And do you have enough, you know, for lack of a better word, coverage to make it through, so to speak?
Okay. Well, there were a couple of things you've said that I wanted to drill down on a little bit. First of all, I think I heard you say that you thought the capital markets might be in for a bit of a difficult time. What are you expecting in terms of fundraising, both for your company and for startups? What's that climate going to be like?
Yeah. So I think the earlier stage climate is going to be tricky, if not very, very difficult for the next 6 to 9 months. And call earlier stage where either lack any revenue at all or significant revenue, and you're in kind of loss making for a while. You kind of move into growth equity, the landscape we play in, and it's a pretty wide landscape in terms of defining it. You know, we, as you might know, we invest in companies that are as small as 10 million and as large as 30 or 40 million in revenue at time of investment. And, but yet they grow pretty quickly and they get to of size fairly quickly. The point there for fundraising is There's a desire to see profitable growth now that hasn't been there for the last literally 10 years. So I think the mindset shift was very abrupt for the entrepreneurs, the management teams. Okay. I think the good news, if they had good backers or a good board, you sort of explain this back at the end of Q1, early Q2, is there's been 3 or 6 months of digesting this. So the hardest thing I see in my boardrooms, it was more mid-year where the mindset shifted so fast, they almost couldn't believe it. They'd hear from multiple people that, No. If you think you can put up big losses and just double your revenue and that's going to be okay, that's where you're seeing the growth equity and private equity landscape get, you know, pretty demanding, for lack of a better way to put it. There's this rule of 40, whereas if your top line is growing 40% and you have zero EBITDA, you're a 40%, you're a rule of 40 qualified. If you're going 50% and losing 10% EBITDA, you're still a rule of 40. that's a framework that works to some degree. I'm seeing even more scrutiny on that. But the point is, paying attention to those kinds of things, the premium has gone way up. So I think from a fundraising perspective, look, I just be clear, we've closed as of last week with a deal we recently closed in the K1 reporting space. That was our sixth new investment of the year, which is on pace to be a typical year for us. Not okay. Super fast, right. Certainly not slow. Mm-hmm. I'd say the last few back half of the year, it's not like we drove terms to be ridiculous. And frankly, a couple of deals, I still felt like we paid a really good price, you know, but of mm-hmm. course I should say that on my side, the entrepreneur should say they didn't see high enough valuation. But the point being, you've seen prices adjust and expectations adjust, but they haven't gone through the floor. Good businesses are still seeing pretty attractive valuations with the capital markets reflecting a little bit of that pullback as well, right? The software industry itself is, and software as a service is down anywhere from 3 to 5 turns of revenue, depending on the sector, which is a pretty big pullback.
Right. Okay. Well, you valuations was the next thing I wanted to talk about. I heard a lot over the past couple of years about how difficult it was to pin down valuations. And I've heard you describe a reset that occurred during the pandemic or in the immediate aftermath. What were you seeing? What explain that to us about what you meant by that?
Yeah, interesting. You sort of described earlier this sort of self-inflicted recession and pullback, but all of a sudden we found out really quickly the Zooms, the Pelotons, et cetera, the COVID lockdown stocks, if you will, right. Just went through the, you know, literally right. through the roof in terms of valuations. But with it came a lot of dragging of software with it, sort of automation. We're going to be remote forever. So we got to spend on getting our technology right, et cetera, et cetera. And what happened, frankly, was, you know, fast money, easy money became the name of the day, the game of the day. And so we saw expectations, if you will, for software as a service companies, good ones, double digit revenue multiples were kind of the, you know, 10 plus X was sort of almost table stakes. We saw numbers get really crazy beyond that. Okay. So this reset, if you will, is what I'll call, again, saying specific numbers always get you in trouble, but single digits, depending on the space.
Okay.
What I'll call a much more realistic opportunity to not have to grow into the valuation, but actually have the valuation make sense at time of investment. And both sides realizing that you're not going to get a round done if your expectations are more in 21 or late 2020. I'll say it that way. Okay. You're still seeing a little bit, not as much as I think we saw in Q3 and early Q4, trying to sort of have structure overcome too high a valuation. So you structure around with a high, sure. you know, sort of sticker price, but structure around it. I'm seeing some of that now reduce as well, sort of a, if we're going to raise money, we're going to do it at a price everyone thinks is the right price, so to speak. But yeah. I would say there's not a dysfunction. There's not a lack of liquidity. There, again, good businesses are seeing, if not multiple term sheets, a handful of term sheets and an opportunity to raise money. So we're not anywhere near a, you know, nuclear winter by any means.
Okay. All right. And what does that mean then for the IPO and M&A markets? Do you have any thoughts about what that's going to look like?
Yeah. Unfortunately, that is absolutely still frozen. Okay. The IPO market, there are a handful of deals getting done, but it's been it's a really soft year here. It's going back, you know, at least the last thing I saw as of last week, we're talking, you know, a decade's worth of kind of comparison-ish to where we saw with the number of listings in the tech space. That's mostly driven by valuation and risk-taking. So on the buy side, folks not wanting to put positions on that reward, you know, losses or reward high growth. And tech itself is generally both of those, if not at least high growth.
Right.
So you're seeing sort of the risk-off mentality cause the IPO market to be pretty much frozen on the tech space.
Okay.
And if I were, again, crystal ball, I had this conversation with someone who I'd say is as smarter than me, probably smarter than me on this stuff last week. And they thought it was Q1 24. I was sort of making the argument of Q4 23 that you start to see some brightening. The issue with the IPO market when it freezes like this is no one wants to be first.
Right.
So you have this sort of everyone sizing it up. And the good news and why you're not seeing sort of .com type of meltdowns, you do have good businesses. They can pull back. They did raise a lot of money.
Right.
During the pandemic and the last couple of years. So for the most part, you've got companies who could be public with a choice not to be. That's the best way I would characterize it. So why be first? Why take a valuation that the capital markets are going to be punitive on? So I'd say it's more valuation centric around this inflation and fighting the Fed. You're not getting rewarded for taking risk or growth
right
at this time.
Okay. All right. Now you, your firm does a lot of work in both fintech and for years you've been in fintech and healthcare IT. I'm curious what you think about those two industries. Where are they going, and how is that? What's the outlook there?
You know, I still, you know, fintech has been frankly very tough in the capital markets, okay. Public capital markets. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, and then this year in the private markets, you've seen a pretty big, if you compare year over year, pullback on that as well. Now that's a little bit to do with, again, during the pandemic, everything's going to be electronically completed, payments, etc. You know, tomorrow, and consumer adoption tends to take time. And I guess what I'd say is on the B2C side, you see a lot of valuations that were kind of chasing, and now you're seeing some, you know, let's have the companies catch up.
Okay.
But I'd say in terms of themes, you know, and obviously we haven't even talked about FTX or crypto. And as you probably know, I personally haven't been a big bull on coins or crypto from that perspective. Mm-hmm. In fact, I've been pretty negative. But the blockchain itself is a technology that I think has a lot of promise.
Okay.
And so now this sort of shaking out with the big issue around FTX obviously is going to put a thaw on that for a while. And someone's going to be right on the coin side of this trade, but I'm just not going to play in it. I think as it relates to compliance, regulatory technology, payments still has a long way to go on vertical payments. I think there's still fintech is, you know, if I may have said to you last time we spoke, which was, I think, early 21, mm-hmm. we're early innings. Now we're kind of in the middle of the game. If I use the baseball analogy, we're still not kind of getting into the last third of the game here in fintech by any means.
Okay.
As it relates to healthcare IT, there's a lot of opportunity now. And it's funny because there's some convergence going on, fintech and healthcare IT convergence, where you see hospital systems and payers, insurance companies behaving more like what we saw capital markets companies have to do, like trading firms, brokerage firms, really electronify the entire transaction and have the clearance of a bill happen much quicker. And that's also being forced by the consumer, you know, you or I as the patient, having more responsibility on high deductible plans.
Right.
That's driving more consumers' desire to have an accessible understanding of their plan, what they paid for. So I think there's a lot to come, specifically as it relates to all three, what we call kind of the three P's, payer, provider, and patient, all being involved in healthcare.
Okay.
Before, you know, as a patient, your insurance company kind of took care of it for you and you did this deductible. Now the deductible going so much higher, out of network being so much more important, I think we see a big trend. And then the other piece we see in terms of consumer being wanting more from their healthcare capability or membership, as the insurance companies like to call us members, but we all know it's, we're sort of customers and sometimes don't feel like we're treated that well even, right? Our insurance company relationship tends to be a bit challenged. I think it's getting better, but it's not there yet. On the big theme side, we think behavioral health, you know, mental health, and then home health, all are early days. We know we've got this mental health crisis in this country, and how we deal with it and how we treat it. We think technology is going to play a big part. And obviously COVID, the pandemic, drove a big home health understanding.
Yes.
And that's early days as well. We have a couple of portfolio companies, one in New Jersey, actually, that addresses this exact area. And we've seen ebbs and flows. And during early pandemic, it obviously was through the roof because you couldn't have people in the hospital. But now you're seeing a more consistent, the hospital systems, the payers leaning in to figure out right. what the best solution is from a home healthcare capability. So those are two big themes we see okay. as we look forward in 23 and 24 that we'll invest in.
Right. And that matches up with folks I've talked to in the healthcare industry, that technology, information technology in particular, is a massive part of what they're going to be about going forward. So, all right. Absolutely. Well, since you mentioned crypto, I'm just going to ask quickly. There's been some fallout from FTX, obviously. BlockFi in Jersey City filed for bankruptcy. Is it limited to those kinds of companies, or is this the sort of thing where contagion could spread farther beyond that?
Well, I think when there's this large an event, contagion tends to spread further than we all think. You know, okay. the cloud kind of spreads. I do think, in defense of the industry, this does appear to me, and by all accounts, this is fraud and not, you know, I hate to be so brazen, and you are innocent until proven guilty in this country still, but it does look like when you don't know where the money's going, you're using customers' money for purposes unintended. Right. That just doesn't seem right. Right. Yeah. The bottom line is, I think blockchain, as I said earlier, is a technology here to stay in multiple industries. I think there's really crypto as a currency and as a coin. You know, this whole debate, is it an asset or is it a security? That's going to be for others in DC to end up deciding. But I think we're going to see a forcing function of a decision now. Gensler's pretty gung-ho on making a call. I think other contagion really depends on, was anyone else doing things with their balance sheets they shouldn't have been doing? How, for lack of a better way, leveraged was it? You know, it does look like some of what Binance did to FTX, you know, kind of accelerated, but if the money's not there and it's other people's money, you have to run the bank. What are you going to do?
Right.
I do think Coinbase is a, for lack of a better way to put it, a stable business. Again, valuation notwithstanding and a tough capital markets, plus a big event like this is going to take lots of things down. Right. But I think there is a guilt by association in the private markets going on right now. And I can speak to my friends in the industry, venture and growth equity, that invest in crypto or had crypto funds. They're sort of like, okay, everything stops for a bit. Take a breather and see, to your point, how much fallout there is. So I think as a space where crypto folks were raising money on napkins and business plans, literally $4 million, $6 million, $10 million seed rounds, right, those have stopped.
Okay.
Pretty much full stop.
Okay.
And I don't have a prediction for you when they turn back on, other than to say, after the FTX sort of dust is settled and making sure, to your point, there's not further spreading, I would guess we have a few more surprises to come. I don't know what they are, and I don't know of anything specific that I'm not saying, but I just feel like when it's this big, as we've seen, it's gotten bigger and bigger since the day it sort of hit the news. So I kind of feel like we're another quarter away from really knowing the full effect of the situation.
Right. Well, that's why I asked, because it seems crypto has now become a dirty word. and yes, blockchain is a technology that exists, but it seems like anything connected to it is guilty until proven innocent at this point.
I think that's the right way to think about it, for better or worse. And I hate to sound like someone who's, as I mentioned, my gray hair before, you know, the yelling at the clouds kind of meme that you see out there on the internet. Right. But I do continue to ask the question, if a currency has to have anonymity, what are you buying? What do you need it to be anonymous for? There is the argument around Federal Reserve systems, not just ours, but international ones, having too much control and or not being able to control enough what they think they control. Right. That's the reason. The anonymity piece is the piece that I think makes me scratch my head about the real purpose, if you will. So that's why I've been a little bit more, if you will, bearish on this, of trying to figure out the use case, what it has to be. Then anonymity is one of the driving factors. That hasn't made enough sense to me.
Right. Okay. Well, you've been generous with your time. Just one more thing before I let you go. Is there anything else that you're looking at right now? Any trend for 2023? Any industries that you were looking at? Is geopolitics, elections coming, another big presidential election coming up the year after next? What's going to be driving your decision-making over the next 12 months?
I think it's sort of all the things that you said kind of conspire to, volatility is never a friend of the capital markets. Folks want certainty to some degree, consistency, maybe you'd even say, versus even certainty. And I'd say that's where you get this sort of everything's on fire kind of feeling. We felt that at the very early stages of pandemic. Mm-hmm. We settled into our different sort of mindsets of, you know, working from home, et cetera. I do think, to your point earlier in this conversation, people have a desire to get back to it, like business travel up, and this sort of idea of the Monday, Friday, I extend my weekend, but I go do a business trip. That all sort of bodes well for getting back to business. So I do feel like there's a pent-up demand to get kind of back to business, or we're already been back for a while. Now we've got this hiccup with inflation. But my view is inflation's got to calm down. We got to see, frankly, the Congress and the Senate take down the vitriol a bit, very frankly. And we got to, you know, I hate to say it, hope is not a strategy, but we have to hope Powell is more right than not. Early days of this, he was wrong calling it, you know, transitory.
Right.
It seems like this hawkishness has another two quarters to go from my perspective.
Okay.
So I do think the back half of 23 is going to feel a lot better than the first half. And so I think that's where I feel as a kind of macro. On a micro, we feel like great businesses are created in this time. You know, the Buffett, you know, as the tide goes out, you feel like you find out who's not wearing the pants. I think that's a great analogy for, if you got a great business today, you got a really good business when things start to look better. So we're going to stay consistent, I think, is the theme for us.
Okay.
And not grow at all costs, have great unit economics, pay attention to things that we took for granted that didn't matter, like gross margin, customer acquisition costs. If I'm giving entrepreneurs tips, it's know your metrics inside and out. That's how you're going to be successful in, you know, kind of the short and long term.
Okay. Well, Chris Stugden, managing partner of Edison Partners, thanks for taking the time. I hope you'll come back and we'll check back in and see how things are going.
Love to do it, Jeff. Thank you for having me. It's a lot of fun.
Great. And thank you all for watching. Until next time, stay safe, everyone.